You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
As the news director of BFM, I've been struggling to get my head around how to tackle something pretty major over the past few weeks. Now that Trump's in office, how are we to go about reporting on him? At a surface level, this question seems obvious. We continue, as we normally would with any world leader, politician, or figure who holds considerable power in the public eye, to hold them to account. But the new Trump administration is unusual in the way of defending their use of alternative facts. Don't get me wrong. A lot of presidents of the United States have uttered various falsehoods at some point. Bill Clinton said he didn't have sex with that woman.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Which he did. Richard Nixon famously denied his involvement in the Watergate scandal.
I don't know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Even though he definitely was involved. However, Trump exists on a level of his own. The Pulitzer Prize-winning website PolitiFact rates a whopping 69% of statements Trump said as being false, all the way from mostly false examples.
In Chicago, which has the toughest gun laws in the United States, probably you could say by far, they have more gun violence than any other city.
To pants on fire level false.
Radical Islamic terrorists are determined to strike our homeland. It's gotten to a point where it's not even being reported. And in many cases, the very, very dishonest press doesn't want to report it.
Trump's VP, Mike Pence, also doesn't fare too well on the website either, with 45% of his statements tagged as containing various levels of false information. On top of this, another facet of the media's relationship with the new Trump administration is the amount of contempt they've expressed towards the press and the subsequent impacts of this. Trump himself has declared he's at war with the media and has shut down a number of mainstream US news outlets at press conferences for being fake news. So how does the media work with this? One ultimate challenge is how we use our language when we're covering Trump's actions and statements. A contentious issue that's been widely discussed in the media over recent weeks is the use of the term lying. Satirist John Oliver repeatedly called the president a liar in a piece about how the president lives in an alternate reality that aired earlier this week.
Now, since taking office around 412 years ago, Trump has made it clear that reality is not important to him. Think about it. He's exaggerated the size of his inauguration crowd. He said the election was marred by mass voter fraud with no real proof of that. He also falsely claimed that, that compared to Muslims, it was almost impossible for Christian refugees from Syria to get into the US. He even lied about the weather during his inauguration.
But the news media needs to be more careful than comedians with such terms. NPR's David Falkenflik explains why.
In journalism, we tend not to call things lies because lies suggest intent. And we really tend not to call people liars because we can't look into their minds and their hearts. And yet, if something is asserted without evidence, indeed in the face of countervailing evidence, and I think that the question of birthers, who made claims about President Obama not being born in this country with all evidence proving he was born in Hawaii when he said he was, that it's hard not to look at that and call it a lie. The risk for the press is that if you call things – if you call people names, and particularly if you call people names rather than acts by their names, but you alienate a lot of their supporters and they may not look at you as honest brokers. And that's a dilemma we haven't fully grappled with. You know, I think there's a difference between the New York –
There's also the risk of sparking things like defamation lawsuits, which I can confirm is something here at BFM we can't really afford to get into. So being sure of our language use is one thing, but is that enough to finding the balance between accurately holding the president to account and not appearing as though we've launched a smear campaign against him? I spoke to a few people directly about their thoughts on this. This is News Hub's political editor, Patrick Gower.
You know, I think that the media here needs to stay close to the public. You know, you can't lose the public. Your ultimate guard against getting hacked to bits by, you know, a leader or something, is the fact that the public trust you and rate you and count on you. And I think if you end up in a scenario where the public feels, you know, that they can't trust the media anymore, that's what allows negative forces or bad forces to come in and take hold, you know, a vacuum. And, you know, the important thing for the media here, myself included, you know, is that we've got to stay close to the people of New Zealand and just and give them something that they feel that they can count on. Because if you don't and they leave you, they're very, very hard to get back. It's very, very hard to get people back. And other forces will be there to take them, whether it's political forces or different kind of media forces. Other people will take them. They will look elsewhere. You know, they won't. They don't sort of go and hide somewhere and not listen to anything or do anything. You know, they go out and find somewhere else to get their information. And you know, that's the challenge for the media in New Zealand. It's just you know, you got to keep the public's trust, or else other people will go out and take it.
AUT Journalism Curriculum Leader Helen Sissons shared some similar thoughts with me around the importance of establishing the public's trust with our coverage.
It doesn't matter where you are in the world as a media person. You've got to think, what is my role in informing citizens? And it's about time. You know, the public's trust in the media has eroded because of things like clickbait. I mean, you know, you click on something and you're let down because you've been, you know, hooked into something, and it wastes your time. So media has lost a lot of influence while it's been trying to get money. So it's sort of tricked people into clicking on various things. And you know, everybody in the end wants to be informed about something. And so what is our role? Well, our role in New Zealand is just as important as it is anywhere else. It's to inform the citizens about what is going on. And, you know, it's not good enough just to inform them of what's going on in this small country at the end of the world. And what Trump does affects us. Mm. So I think our role is to be just as vigilant, however, not to be hysterical. One of the big problems that's happened since Trump came to the White House is every tweet he fires off has caused the media to go into meltdown. And I think that erodes trust as well. So we have to take a step back and say, what do we really need to call him out on? What don't we go like rabbits down a rabbit hole rushing after him? Because this isn't a normal person. And, you know, he fires off tweets about all sorts. You know, what is all the satire? Is satire good, or is it actually also eroding influence? You know, I think that we really need to think about what are the people seeing? What is the information they're seeing? What do they need to know?
When I asked her further on ways to gain trust from the public and not alienate our listeners, she emphasised the importance of context in our reporting and about how it's a crucial step in achieving coverage that matters.
I think you've got to take a step back and go, what is important here? What is the overall? And not just chase every little thing that comes out of the White House. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's certain important things that happen. You know, and I think the travel ban and how it was described was a really important debate. I think the promoting of Ivanka Trump was actually quite important because it broke some very important lines. You know, what is the pattern here? The pattern is that the Trump White House is breaking the separation of powers rule. That's a really important debate. And then you can use those examples to say, what is the actual story here? The story is not every little thing that happens. It's what does it add up to? And I think that's where the intelligence of the media, you know, journalists are smart people, they're well educated, you know, and they have a good general knowledge. So to step back and go, well, this is what's happening in terms of the importance, the significance of these small actions. Not every small action, because it needs context. Mm. And I think what's been lacking in a lot of media reporting in the last decade is the context. And that's basically as age has left the newsroom, and the newsroom's been filled with young people who actually perhaps don't even know about separation of powers. So it is about, some people are going to have to catch up in what is their general knowledge around the way that the American political system is set up. You know, and sometimes you might have to just turn to people who might know. Go to the experts and ask them, what does this actually mean, rather than reporting every little thing, because that becomes boring because it's out of context.
So even though Trump's relationship with the media is a tense one, there are ways we can still go about doing our job. Sure, our slender news operation here at BFM doesn't have quite the same resources as NPR or the BBC to be able to live fact check everything the president says the moment he says them. But we can still remember the importance of context and to not get caught up in the hysteria of this new administration. And also, I want to say that your feedback is crucial to us in the way that we report issues. If you think anything we do is out of line, then let us know. This is Shemina Smith, reporting for BFM News.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.